just learned in Rail 6. So in terms of the weapons training, that was kind of, you were kind of eased into that gradually. Were you introduced to the Bren gun early on, or did that come later?
Yeah, that came into it.
Very early, even as a...
Yeah.
And during this early phase, would you be free on an evening, or would you be confined to barracks?
No, the only time that we were confined to barracks was just that time when we had the inoculation. You were confined to barracks then, but the fact is that they knew damn well that you wouldn't want to go out anyway because you didn't feel like it, so that didn't really make it much different. No, we weren't confined to barracks. You could go out in the evening if you want.
So what time would your duties be finished, you know, all kind of training?
I should think about 5, 4, sometime between 4 and 5, I should think. 5 o'clock, say.
And what would happen after that? What would your options
be? Well, you'd have tea. There'd be tea time. Go and have your tea, and if you wanted to go out in the evening, you could. We weren't that far away from town. We just had to walk down the road into the town. We weren't that far, very far.
How did you feel in terms of money, in terms of what you'd been paid in civilian life and what you were getting paid in the army?
I can only speak for myself because we were only getting, what was it, about seven bob a week.
And what?
Ten bob.
And how did that compare with your last civilian?
Well, it didn't really.
It was a lot less?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so there's no more than ten.
Did people kind of have savings that they were drawn on, or, you know, to enable them to still have?
To make things easier for them. Well, some of them used to get money sent from home. In my case, I didn't, because I was half of my money was being sent home anyway to my mother. But that was only my case.
And that was like an allotment that you could make.
An allotment, yeah. I arranged that as soon as I could. But that was only my arrangement. But other people, it worked the other way around. They were getting, people were sending them money if they could afford it, and so it wouldn't be too bad for them. The army pay, such as it was.
So did you think that restricted really what you could do?
Well, it did. Oh, it did. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one trip. You've been to the pictures once. That's about in the week, and then you'd probably have enough left to see you through for go over to Naffy and get some tea and a couple of buns or a sandwich or something. Well, in those days in the Naffy, it was always the old buns, the old rock buns. But no, you didn't have them much over.
So did you have people that would like run out of money before?
Oh yeah.
Paper, right? Yeah. And what would they do?
Well, it's just their hard luck, really. You usually manage to find, as time went along, you began to sort of make friends with each other and one thing and another. Maybe somebody would be a bit of a money bag, and wouldn't mind lending you a couple of bob, providing you gave it to him back and all that sort of thing. We made it up one way or the other. I didn't do any borrowing myself, but I'm not going to say that there were a lot of them who did, but then I always paid their way, you know.
And in terms of your introduction to soldier, and did you did you do any route marches or anything at this stage?
Yeah.
If you were getting over that already.
Yeah, as time went along that first, well, the depot time was about 6 weeks, and by the time we completed our 6 weeks in the depot at Kempston, we would have done 2 or 3 route marches by then.
And how long would they be?
Well, they used to be what, 10 miles, something like that. They used to step them up. They'd probably start you off with about 5 or 7 miles, something like that, and then just step it up a bit. By the time you were finished your 6 weeks there, your basic training, as I called it, you would probably have been doing the 10-mile route marches by that time.
So what would you have learned at the end of the 6 weeks?
Well, you would have learned, first of all, you could control your feet, that was one thing. You knew the drill, you knew how to use a rifle and a Bren gun and a Tommy gun.
You knew how to fire them as well?
Oh, not there we didn't. We went elsewhere to do that. That was the next stage.
So you were introduced to a Tommy gun even at this stage, the Thompson?
Yeah. That was part and parcel of the weapon training.
Even in early 1940?
Yeah, just about when Thompson's submachine gun was just about coming in. There weren't many of them, but it was just about coming in.
So, and after 6 weeks, what happened then?
Well, after 6 weeks, we were then sent to what they call the Advanced Training Company. I better explain that. There was a mini depot, because it was only quite a small place. And it was in Bedford, and it was in Ashburnham Road in Bedford. And it was, as I say, it was quite a small place. And they had training staff there, training NCOs there, who seemed to be, it was a continual thing, you see. They were there more as they stayed there. I took one squad, and then when I finished with them, another squad would come along and overtake them, and so it went on. So that is where we went to. We went there for two reasons. One was for we'd already got the route march under our belt. Got that all right. We did a bit of route march in there, but we also did some field stuff. Took us out on manoeuvres and that. And we also fired our course there.
What was that? Say that again. Fired your course?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, that means you were taken on the open range, and you were taken onto the open range, and you would then fire your rifle and the Bren gun, and not the Tommy gun, rifle and the Bren gun, and you did that. They called it the firing of course, but it was all targets, and you were taught how. You know the actual firing on the range, using live ammunition, and you would then switch. You would be on the, we'll say you were firing from, say 200 yards or 400 yards, well then there would be a changeover, and you would go into the butts, and those in the butts would come out and go on to do the firing. And then when you were in the butts, what they called the butts, where the targets were, you'd have to learn how to signal the shots as they came in. You'd have to learn how to signal the shots so that you do it with a stick with a disc on the end, and you would either, well, you would, some places you twirl it around, some places you do that. There's all different things.
And that was a signal to see, to say.
The people on it must, you know, they could see that. They could see the disc, you see. You were down in the butts. You were down below in the sea, quite safe.
So you'd been marching with the rifle for quite a few weeks. Could you just talk us through that first day when you get over this, when you're firing, yeah, and what was the problems, yeah, what were the pitfalls?
Yeah, that was
you must have been looking forward to that if you've been carrying these things around for several weeks.
You were, in a way, but you didn't really know what to expect. Although I always told you that you would get a certain amount of kick, and they kept on emphasising that you would get a certain amount of kick back, and that they never really harped on it, you know, but they just kept reminding you. It wasn't until you actually got on the range that you actually found out for yourself, you know. Well, having done it once or twice, you seem to get used to it.
So how were you taught to cope with the rifles?
Well, the only thing you could do was, first of all you had to get in the correct position, and you had to lay oblique to your target and that sort of thing, and get it comfortable so that the butt of your rifle was right up here, and you know, and just to take the impact, you see. But unless you were right, you would get your kick would be worse, and you would be far worse.
Can you remember anybody where that happened?
Well, yeah, a lot of them did make the mistake of, well, they made two mistakes. Well, either they weren't laying properly in the right position, or they didn't pull the rifle back and hold it tightly enough into the shoulder.
So you were taught to fire prone first, from a prone position?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Were you taught also to fire?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
And how would the NCOs organise this? How many men would be lined up firing at the range?
Well, you'd have about, on the fire, on the range, you would have between 6 and 10 people firing at the targets at once.
And how would the NCO teach?
The NCOs were right behind you, and just to make sure that you were in, as I say, in the right position, doing the right things.
So they would check you for your posture?
Oh, yeah. If they saw you doing wrong, they were there to tell you about it. Oh, yeah.
And you were using the Bren as well at this stage?
Bren, yeah. Yeah, well, that was another thing. See, that's what they said, with regard to the Bren gun, see, you've got the different sort of reaction on the Bren gun. The rifle is a single shot, so therefore you're only going to get a single sort of reaction. But with a Bren gun, firing automatic on a bit of Bren gun, you've got to remember that you're getting it all the time. You know, you're getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4. Not necessarily 5, it could be 7 or it could be 4, could be anything. However long. Hello.
Right, so we're talking about the ranges and the Bren gun.
I said that this was from Ashburnham Road, that's in Bedford. So what we used to do, first of all, what I missed out was that when we left Kingston Barracks, we were sent down to Ashburnham Road, and they told us before we left Kingston that we'd be going into civilian billets for the period of time that we were going to be at Ashburnham Road. So that would be probably about 6 weeks. But I said for the whole of that time we would be in civilian billets. And I said, we're not going to tell you, we can't tell you what to do or how to how you're expected to get on down there, and he said they'll tell you that when you get there. So we were shipped off. We went off down to Aspernham Road, and then we met our new. We left Sergeant Adam and the others behind at the depot, and then we came up with two more NCOs. I'm only talking about as far as our platoon was concerned. It was Sergeant Bond and a bloke called Ainsley, Corporal Ainsley. Anyway, we came up with them. By that, they were our two NCOs for whilst we were, and they were. So we were responsible to them, and then so what they did when we got there, this Sergeant Bond, he said, because we had to take all our kit down with us. Well, not with us, but I mean, it was taken, all our kit was taken down, everything we had, you know. And he said, what I'm going to do, he said, I'm going to march you around into the next road. Well, Aspernham Road was like, say, there. And you had another road there, see? So you just march to the end of Aspernham Road, turn to the right again, you come back again in this road here. Now, when you're going to that road, it was a series of big houses, all of them. And we were going to be split up into ones and twos, in some cases four, into these houses. And that would be our billet for the next six weeks. Now, I told you earlier that I had hung on to this friend of mine that I knew locally, Fred Botton. We'd hung on together. We were still together. So that's what happened. This Sergeant Bond took us round, and he took us into the next road, and then he halted us in the road. And we sort of stood facing one of these houses. So he said, well, he had a list and everything in his hand, because this was all done by the army that arranged all this, and these people were paid to take us in, you see. And there was somebody at Aspernham Road Depot who was responsible for all of us. And some army officer, anyway, housing officer, whatever they called him. And so all he did, Sergeant Bond, all he did was he looked at his list and he'd take the first house, and he may have a two or a three or four or whatever, or one maybe. And he just picked somebody out, nearest one to him, and said, right, that's yours over there. And so, once you knew where you had to go, that's all you needed to know. And he went right through the platoon like that. And we were in a position where we were about, he stopped us about halfway along the road. And so we knew exactly where we had to go. We knew which house we had to go. In some cases, we had to go behind us because there was houses on the other side of the road.
And this is
all big houses.
Were the civilians still living there?
Yeah. So there was civilians still living there, yeah.
Was it less disciplined living in village than?
Oh, yeah. So I'll tell you. You see, it just depended. you could be lucky and you could be unlucky. Because as far as me and Red Potton was concerned, it wasn't too bad. We had no cause to grumble.
It was just the two of you in this house.
Well, no, not because of just the two, yeah. But we didn't have any cause to grumble. We got on okay with him. He was the oldest chap, his wife was living with him, and he employed two maids. One was did the cooking, and the other one did the cleaning. He told us what the names were, because they were going to feed us at whatever times we needed to be fed.
So the army would pay people like him to look after.
Yeah, they got paid for that. Yeah, but you see, the thing was that once you got into these places, they were doing it all the time. We weren't the only ones that had been there. There'd been some before us, and there's going to be a lot more come after us. So they weren't. That was nothing unusual to them, and so they all had their own. I can't speak for all of the people because I never met them, but I can only go by what some of the blokes told me and how they go on. But by and large, everybody got fairly well settled. You see, it was all worked out before Sergeant Bond sort of did this you and you business. It was all worked out. He knew exactly who, how many was going to these houses. He didn't care who they were, but he.
So you managed to link up with your friend.
Well, I mean, that was up to you.
So I should have asked you earlier. In the barracks, at the stage of your training, there would have been inspections and so on, wouldn't there?
Oh yeah.
Now, can you describe what would happen?
Kit inspections. Yes, kit inspections. You mean?
Yeah.
Well, that was once a week. You also had one of them.
And what did that involve? How did that work?
Oh well, you'd have to lay everything out. You see, we were the people who were in the in the Nissen huts had the same type of bed as we did with the three biscuits on, so that was very easy. All you did was to lay the biscuits out and your kit went on top of it. That was all dead easy, but it had to be done a certain way, of course, but you were shown how to do that, and they used to do that. You used to have a kit inspection once a week.
And who would inspect you?
Either it was always your platoon NCOs. In our case, it would either be Sergeant Allen or one of the lance corporals would come round and have a look.
What about the officers? Did you see much of?
No, we didn't have any platoon officers at all in the depot.
So did you ever see any officers?
Oh yeah, we.
What would they be doing if they weren't?
Well, they were all the officers in the depot. In the barracks were either in what I would call battalion headquarters, or intelligence, or something like that.
So they didn't have anything.
Not with the squads.
They didn't have anything to do with the squads at that stage. So once you'd moved to the billets, were there still inspections there?
No.
So that would be easier.
A lot easier. See, well, what as I say, that was the procedure once we got to Ashburn and Road, and then you see, having Sergeant Bond having told everybody where they were going to go, and he then turned us around. We went back again to the little depot in Ashburn and Road, and. By that time, most of our kit had been sent down from the depot, and we had to pick up our kit and take it to and get sorted in the place where he told us to go.
So you're in billets now,
and
you were still training. So what would happen if you couldn't get out of bed in the morning or you were late? Did that happen? How would you get out of bed on a morning?
Well, you'd have to make some arrangement because.
With your landlord,
you could get around that because most of these big houses, most of those houses, the people were reasonably well-to-do. They had to be in those houses anyway, because goodness only knows what the rates would have been in places like that. Yeah, or I would have had to have had a little bit of something beyond it, mind you, but then we'll pay for doing it. Yeah.
So how did you get out of bed in the morning and get to where you need to be?
Well, I think me and Reg, we tried it on our own at first, and we didn't do too bad, but we decided to play it safe, and we got one of the maids to come and give us a knock on the door. Well, I better tell you that this was the, I'm telling you about these houses and these people who were taking the lifestyle us in. When you, like I said, they sent their kit down from the depot. We picked our kit up and went round, and then the rest of the day we were sort of getting our kit in and getting organised, you know, in the billet. So what happened was that we went round there and we went round to the billets and took our kit round. I'm only talking now about just me and Reg, because the same thing happened with everybody. When we got round there, he was waiting for us, this chap. And he said, there's two or three things I've got to tell you, he said. And this is when we got some idea of what he was like. He said, there's two or three things I've got to tell you. He said, first of all, he said, you never use a front door. He said, that's not you. And he said, I don't want anybody coming to the front door for you. And he said, you yourselves will use the side door. He said, you'll find out, if you follow this path, he said, you'll find out there's an outbuilding on the side with the door. He said, that's the door you'll use. And he said, once you're in there, he said, in the conservatory, he said, once you're in there, you take your boots off. Any time, always take your boots off in the conservatory and leave them there. And his other thing is, he said, never wear your boots inside the house and never on any account go up the stairs with your boots on. But he said, your boots have always got to be left in the conservatory. So we knew where we stood with him. Mm-hmm. He told us that right from the start.
What did you think of him when he said that?
No, I didn't think of anything much.
You just accepted it, that would be how...
We accepted it, because once we'd seen the inside of the house, I could understand, really, that he wanted to keep it that way, if you see what I mean.
So, you're in the billets, and you were doing your weapons training with the Bren and with the rifle. What else were you doing in terms of... You mentioned field craft. Could you describe how the initial training in field craft went?
We did some compass work down there.
That was learning to read maps.
And compass bearings and things like that. And they used to have a small exercise of some sort and organise that. But Sergeant Bond used to do all that. They used to work that in. You never used to go on the range every day. Used to be on the range three times a week. But the days in between, they used to either give you the field craft and the compass and that sort of thing, that training, or you would do a small route march.
What about grenades and the boys anti-tank rifle?
Came in with the weapon training. I did. We were taught all that. We had that at the depot, really.
Oh, so you'd started that at the depot. Mm. Had you actually thrown grenades at the depot?
Only dummies.
Only dummies. Mm.